This is the Dr. Touch podcast. Episode 13, Long Stretch. It's just a couple more weeks until the first iPads hit the store. Still, there are a couple of interesting news items that we shall explore. Also, special guest today, Barbara Gavin from Pearson. We're going to talk about the Voices That Matter iPhone Developers Conference. This episode of the Dr. Touch podcast is brought to you by Dr. Touch's Parts Store. Easy to use yet professionally looking components that you can use to spruce up your own apps. Augmented reality, calendar control, pin lock, or purchase button are just some examples. You get full source code, no static library crap, and lifetime support by Dr. Touch himself. Check it out today. And these are the news. Wired magazine showed off how the digital interactive iPad version of their magazine could look like. Though it might be something of a shock to us hardcore Cocoa coders, Adobe built the prototype for Wired in Air. They use a component that's called Packager to recompile an Adobe Air output into a binary for iPad. The demonstration is really gorgeous. They are aiming for a release in summer. You know, I might start reading magazines again, which I had quit because I didn't want the waste of glossy paper on my environmental consciousness. A digital subscription might be similar to the current print subscription of Wired, which is $40 domestic US or $70 international. Irvin Macy has fallen into the pool. That in itself is not such a remarkable feat, but he had his iPhone in his pocket, which got soaked as well and would no longer start. Still nothing unusual. But Irvin, instead of throwing the iPhone away, took it apart and documented it on his blog. And when he put it back together, it worked again. Let this be a lesson to us all. If you happen to fall in the pool, just dry your iPhone after you've stopped laughing. Apple likes to remind you that if you want to offer video streams in iPhone apps which are in duration longer than 10 minutes, then you have to use the HTTP live video streaming protocol. There has to be a fallback stream with no more than 64 kilobits, which will be automatically used if network conditions are not able to support more. This essentially means no to RTSP, or the real-time streaming protocol. On the frequently asked questions, there is this interesting question and answer. What advantages does this approach have over RTP/RTSP? HTTP is less likely to be disallowed by routers, not of firewall settings. No ports need to be opened that are commonly closed by default. Content is therefore more likely to get through to the client in more locations and without special settings. HTTP is also supported by more content distribution networks, which can affect cost in large distribution models. In general, more available hardware and software works unmodified and as intended with HTTP than with RTSP/RTSP. Expertise in customizing HTTP content delivery using tools such as PHP is also more widespread. Also, HTTP live streaming is supported in Safari and the Media Player framework on iPhone. RTSP streaming is not supported. I know from my contacts in the media industry that RTSP is still widely used, especially for radio over the internet. But if you want to play with Apple, then you have to switch to the HTTP live streaming standard. Apple has added 9 new countries to the long list of where you can sell your apps. Those are Armenia, Botswana, Bulgaria, Jordan, Kenya, Macedonia, Madagascar, Mali, Mauritius, Niger, Senegal, Tunisia, and Uganda. Those might not be very big markets, but they sound like there might be a niche for some special apps catering to the specific culture needs of these countries. Now the iPhone is available in 94 countries, with 2 more coming soon, Guinea-Bissau and Equatorial Guinea. This made me wonder how many countries there really are. I had estimated around 70, but I was way off, as a quick search on Wolfram Alpha proves there are actually 203 sovereign states on our planet right now. According to Article 1 of the Montevideo Convention of 1933, in which a state must have 1. A permanent population, 2. A defined territory, 3. A government, and 4. A capacity to enter into relation with other states. Now you know. Apple will soon have 96 out of 203, so just about half. So world domination is still a bit off. But we're getting there. Apple has silently increased the Wi-Fi download limit, first to 15 megabytes, now to 20. It's generally believed that this is because hybrid iPad apps require double the amount of artwork to support both resolutions. It is anticipated that the first non-3G iPads will be in store in about a month. However, it is strange because to my knowledge, there's still no method in the 3.2 SDK to actually create hybrid apps. Also, there's yet no final version of the 3.2 SDK which Apple would permit submitting iPad apps with. I get the feeling that there won't be any iPad optimized apps in the App Store store at launch time, except for the iWork apps by Apple themselves. Last week, the Mobile World Congress happened in Barcelona, Spain. Even though Apple itself was not involved in it in the least, the iPhone stole the show. Most vendors, when asked, said that their solutions worked on iPhone and yes, with a little effort also on Symbian and Android. So it's kind of interesting to see the result of Apple's active non-involvement in trade shows. You know, this year also was the first where Apple did not attend the Macworld. It appears that the strategy really works. By not attending, they permit all the other small fish to swim in Apple's waters to flourish, which in turn underlines their vision of being a platform rather than a vendor. Roughly Drafted magazine unearthed the best theory so far as to the real reason why there will never be Flash on iPhone OS devices. It's the mouse over problem. Most current websites using Flash require a visible mouse pointer for interaction, and actions will happen if you move the pointer or hover over certain objects. Like video players would show the controls if you move the mouse. Multitouch has no hovering. That would cause a lot of Flash boxes to not working properly, which would in all likelihood annoy people way more than not being able to see a banner ad trying to get us to punch the monkey. Apple has dramatically changed their stance towards apps which are overtly sexual in nature. For about a year, it was possible to sell such apps provided that your iTunes descriptions and screenshots are 4+ rateable. There is an organization by the name of Parents Television Council, PTC, which describes themselves as the nation's most influential advocacy organization protecting children against sex, violence, and profanity in entertainment, with more than 1 million members and growing. This organization has recently started a campaign, or should we say, crusade, against Apple to stop Apple providing porn to kids, end quote. They explain, quote, Apple is allowing the sale of pornographic applications for iTunes in its iTunes store with the content then being downloaded onto the iPhone. Some of these applications are free to children and adults, and links to websites that lead to even more explicit pornography are also given on iTunes. And even if teens do not purchase or download these apps, underquote, Apple provides samples of the pornography on iTunes for all to see. Typical content that included items with names like Shauna Lee Private Dance, which shows a porn starlet with her hand down the front of her bikini bottom fondling herself. Love Positions Free with a drawing titled Doggy Style showing a couple having sex. 1001 Boobs Light and Tasty Pasties 18+ Amateurs. At one point the 11th most popular app out of thousands on iTunes. All of these applications are free and available to children. Please help us hold Apple responsible for providing pornography to children. Call, email, or send a letter to Apple and tell them to remove pornographic content from the iPhone apps or from the phone apps and iTunes Store. End of quote. What obviously happened is that lots of members of the PTC contacted Apple to complain about this. Apple, trying to be a family-friendly company, sent out Apple notice with this wording. The App Store continues to evolve, and as such, we are constantly refining our guidelines. Your application, beep, contains content that we had originally believed to be suitable for distribution. However, we have recently received numerous complaints from our customers about this type of content and we have changed our guidelines appropriately. We have decided to remove any overtly sexual content from the App Store, which includes your application. Thank you for your understanding in this matter. If you believe you can make the necessary changes so that beep complies with our recent changes, we encourage you to do so and resubmit your review. Sincerely, iPhone App Review. In total, about 5,000 apps were pulled from the store. The general theory is that this is also meant as sprinkling before the extra family-friendly iPad becomes available. Apps of the usual adult publications like Playboy continue to be in the store. When asked why this is the case, Phil Schiller responded that their sexy content had been available previously in widely accepted form. So to summarize, if you want naked flesh, go to Android, because that's where the pissed off adult app providers are now going. Somebody who apparently has had early access to a pre-beta version of iPhone SDK has unearthed evidence of future video chat functionality. There are some buttons with telling names as well as symbol names containing the terms video chat and iChat. So it is very likely that iPhone OS 4.0, which will very likely be presented at WWDC 2010, will include video conferencing features. Earlier reports as to what graphics hardware is included in Apple's A4 chip were false. It was reported that the iPad would use an ARM-based graphics circuit. However, it has been confirmed by Apple now that indeed the iPad also has PowerVR SGX on board. Quote, using OpenGLES on iPad is identical to using OpenGLES on other iPhone OS devices. An iPad is a PowerVR SGX device and supports the same basic capabilities as other SGX devices. However, because the processor, memory architecture, and screen dimensions are different for iPad, you should always test your code on an iPad device before shipping to ensure performance meets your requirements. And now for a bit of fun. Have you ever wondered how many oranges it would take to power an iPhone? The answer is 2,360, according to UK-based marketing company Imperial Leisure. You know that lemons or oranges produce a bit of electricity if poked with different metals. They did it for publicity, but it's still an interesting experiment. Obviously, this is without practical application. If you cannot charge your iPhone, you'd probably be cheaper off if you simply bought a new one instead of all those oranges. You know, lithium-ion batteries come pre-charged, you'd still be able to make some phone calls with it before having to load it. Today I have a special guest. As you might have heard, there's an iPhone conference coming up in April, and I'm not talking about the WWDC. I'm talking about the Voices That Matter conference, which is organized by the preeminent publishing firm for iPhone technical books by the name of Pearson. And today with me, I have the distinct pleasure of welcoming Barbara Gavin, who's going to tell us a little bit about that. So, hi, Barbara.
Hi, Oliver. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Oh, good. It's lunchtime here in Boston.
Aha, so it's already nighttime here in Europe. So it was good that we finally found a time that we can speak with each other.
Well, I appreciate it. I love to talk about my conference.
Yeah, well, the conference, that's the thing that really interests me. Have you done any kind of different iPhone conferences before, or is this the first one?
This will be the second conference, Oliver. We ran this right here in Boston in October and were amazed at the response, the enthusiasm that folks had for the conference. And we were halfway through the conference and we kind of looked at each other and said, we got to do this again on the West Coast.
So West Coast, that's going to be Seattle, if I'm not mistaken?
Correct. So we're going to run the Voices That Matter conference in Seattle, which is in the northwest part of the United States, April 24th and 25th.
Mm-hmm. So who would you say is the core target audience for this conference?
Well, it's interesting. Since it's the second time we've run the conference, we were really able to look at who turned up last time and understand best of who was attracted to it. I would say that the folks that come to the conference are experienced developers. They know their Macs. They know OS X. They're beginners at the iPhone. Most of them had never developed for a mobile platform before. They all had iPhones, but they were beginners at developing. So the things that we talked about in the conference last time around that folks really liked were the differences between developing for a laptop or a desktop and developing for the iPhone. Things like memory management, things like accelerometer. So learning what we did in October in Boston, I think the program in Seattle is really focused on people that know development and want to learn about the iPhone and, quite frankly, the iPad as well.
Mm. Well, there are also guys like myself who never kind of really developed for the Mac, but when I got a MacBook, it was immediately that I got into developing for the iPhone. Been doing that for 2 years now. So mm-hmm. Will there be something for guys like me as well?
Yeah, one of the things we've done is we've kind of separated the conference into tracks. So we've got one track that's called Core Competencies, where we're talking about core data, we're talking about core location, we're talking about core animation. And those are kind of the more basic talks. But we're also talking, we run a track that has to do with iPhone OS interface development, where we're talking about developing a UI that really rocks. We'll be talking about resolution independence. We'll be talking about using gestures. Also developing custom UI designs, you know, not from a template, but custom. We've also got some really hot talks on game development. Obviously, folks that are developing for the iPhone, many of them see their future in game development. So Mike Daly is coming on, and he's giving kind of an introduction to game programming. Then we've got Kevin Avila is going to talk about audio. Eric Buck will talk about OpenGLES. We're also going to have a session on GameKit. So we're trying to really focus on what folks need in order to move forward. So it's not very theoretical. It's very practical. And every hour there's a choice of two talks. So if one thing doesn't appeal to you or one thing is something that you think you already know, there's always an alternative.
Mm. Well, Seattle is really a lucky pick for me because I've never been there. I only hear it's a very, very nice town to be, and the one thing that I heard of that's nice to look at is the Space Needle. But what prompted this choice of a town? Is there anything that is special about it that makes it really good for having a conference like that?
Yeah, actually, we thought long and hard about it. For a lot of reasons, we did not want to be in the San Francisco, San Jose area. We wanted to be kind of separated geographically and time-wise from the WWDC. Seattle is interesting because it's within a couple hours of both Portland and Vancouver. Mm-hmm. So those three cities together have a huge community of developers. In addition, the University of Washington has one of the first iPhone certification programs in the United States. Plus all the game developers up in Vancouver, as well as some great shops, Nintendo and Amazon, are in that area. So we really thought there was a community there that was underserved that we could help.
So, well, for me as a non-geographic expert, you said it's far enough away from San Francisco and the Cupertino area. To me, that's all West Coast, but is it still setting itself apart sufficiently from the WWDC, or do you fear that some people might have to make a decision whether to go to your conference or the WWDC?
Well, obviously, we'd love them to go to both.
All right, yeah.
I would say that WWDC is about all things Apple and all things Macintosh.
Mm-hmm.
This is a much smaller conference. As you know, WWDC is in the thousands. This is going to be 175 people. So it's a different kind of experience. The other big difference is that WWDC, the speakers are all Apple people. So you're definitely getting it from, as they say in America, the horse's mouth. And that has its pluses and minuses. What you will find at our conference is that the speakers are all independent experts. So these are folks that are making their living dependent on Apple, but they don't work for Apple.
Ah, that's interesting. You also chose a very interesting title, Voices That Matter. So are those these voices that matter that you are referring to?
Absolutely. We think the voices that matter are certainly the speakers who are some of our authors. They're authors for other publishing firms. But the voices that matter are also the people that are sitting in the chairs. All of the wisdom in the conference is not necessarily on stage. A lot of the wisdom at that conference are folks sitting next to each other. So that you'll find that with 150, 175 attendees, a lot of your learning happens at coffee breaks and at lunch and in the evening having a beer. And that's one of the things that makes us very certain that it's the right size of conference for this group.
A friend of mine sent me a link for a conference center in Seattle that's, I think, near the port where the cruise ships anchor, and that has a breathtaking view of the mountains and stuff. Is this by any chance this the location for the conference?
The conference is at a place called Bell Harbor International Conference Center.
That's the one, yeah.
And yes, it's definitely on the water. As a matter of fact, I was just talking with the with one of the managers at the conference center, and where we will be eating lunch is one whole wall is all windows overlooking the harbor.
Well, that's going to be amazing, really. I look forward to that. Tell me a bit more. Sorry that I'm drilling so much. But can you tell me a bit which celebrities that we're going to have on the schedule? Who am I going to be networking and meeting there?
Okay. In addition to networking and meeting with other attendees, folks that are doing just what you're doing, the first morning's keynote is being given by Aaron Hillegass. And Aaron runs the Big Nerd Ranch, which is one of the largest training companies both in iPhone and Mac technology, but they also run Django and Ruby training. They have a training center in Atlanta, Georgia. They have one in Frankfurt, and I think they have one in Australia as well. So Aaron Hillegass wrote the book Cocoa Programming for Mac OS X, and he's releasing a new book next month called iPhone Programming. So that's a great keynote. We're just thrilled about that. The other interesting thing is that the conference chair is a woman by the name of Erica Sadoun.
Oh, yeah.
And Erica wrote the iPhone Developers Cookbook, which is obviously now in its second edition with the new SDK. So that's really exciting. We've also have Kevin Avila coming along, and Kevin is giving the audio talk. And he's written our book called Core Audio.
Mm-hmm.
Another kind of fun application is there's a fellow by the name of August Drometer, and August has collaborated on an application called Yowza. Mm-hmm. And Yowza is a location-aware application that gives you coupons. So literally, as you walk past a local shop, you'll get an iPhone. You can sign up to get an iPhone message with a coupon that will give you, 10% off a new pair of blue jeans.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be talking about designing user interfaces, which he gave this talk last year, and it was one of probably the top three talks at the conference last year.
Mm-hmm.
Another person we're really thrilled to have talk of is a woman by the name of Susan Ginsberg. And Susan Ginsberg has written extensively on Apple's Human Interface Guidelines, the HIG,
mm-hmm.
and she'll be talking about that as it relates to the iPhone. And she did not speak for us last year, so we're very pleased that she's able to come up to Seattle. And we add new people all the time. If you look at our website, which is voicesthatmatter.com, I'm adding new speakers every day practically at this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I think I've overrun my audience time with you. As a final statement, could you tell us what does it take financially for me to attend this conference? There's a special early bird tariff, isn't there?
Yes, there's an early bird price so that you can attend the two-day conference for $495 U.S.
Mm-hmm.
What that gives you is all of the training for 2 days, breakfast on both days, lunch on both days, nonstop coffee and soda. And that price is good through March 12th.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe we also had a little discount code for listeners to your podcast.
Ah, and which would that be?
You might want to append that to this later on. But I think Olivia sent you a discount code.
Ah, okay. I'll put that in the show notes then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to this conference.
I'm so glad you could come. That's great.
And thank you for inviting me. And also thank you for telling us what's this going to be about. I guess it's going to be a really amazing experience for all of us who happen to be amongst the lucky 175 who get a ticket. So again, the website is voicesthatmatter.com. And
exactly.
I was talking with Barbara Gavin from the preeminent publishing firm on iPhone tech books, Pearson. So they probably have a website to check out as well. Another Dr. Touch episode is in the can. Be seeing you on the Voices That Matter conference in Seattle.